and welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo, courtesy of NintendoWorldReport.com. I'm your host, Carl Castaneda, and joining me today, Mike Sklens to my right.
Hey there, kiddos.
And across the internets, all the way in California, Stephen Windyman Rodriguez.
What's up, everybody?
And Super North, Jonathan Metz.
Super dork.
All right.
First up, guys, new business. E3's over.
I guess.
Anything?
Did it ever really begin?
No. No, it didn't. Not this year.
Well, we're going to...
Yeah, it did.
It did.
Maybe for you it did.
And it's still not over. And it probably won't be over by the time people start listening to this on Thursday.
Yeah, we still have many a preview to write, so look forward to that. But we're actually going to be talking about E3 in great detail later on in the show, so let's go ahead and go on to...
Let me interject with my slight new business.
Okay, Mike has some new business.
I've got the DS version of Ratatouille, which I was, not terribly looking forward to reviewing, because... Mm. I mean, platformer based on a movie on a handheld system is bound to be not that good.
Yeah.
Turns out, it's actually half decent.
I believe it. I remember reviewing Barnyard on the Wii and being pleasantly surprised by how good a licensed game can be now.
Yeah,
I remember reviewing Ratatouille for Wii and being not pleasantly surprised by it.
The thing that struck me as a smart move on the developer's part was that instead of trying to... replicate what Pixar had done with Ratatouille, because obviously they're not going to get anywhere near it, even on like the PlayStation 3 they won't be getting anywhere near how amazingly beautiful that movie looks. Instead they went with the art of Ratatouille style, which is, it's this very different style, and it's like, it looks like almost like, if you've seen Ratatouille, there's like over the end credit sequence, there's this great, the way the credits are done is like with all these drawings, it's almost like traditional animation.
And, Obi, that's old French art.
Yeah.
That's French watercolor and stuff.
Yeah, obviously, because the movie is based in Paris, and it tries to go after that, and all the menus and a lot of the characters. The in-game doesn't look like that, but you can see there's some definite inspiration from the art of Ratatouille as opposed to the movie Ratatouille.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a good decision on their part. And it's got actually a really good cooking minigame.
Sounds
well,
good.
The Wii version doesn't even have the main villain from the movie.
What?
Wow.
It's just one of those movie-based games that I just shudder to think what someone would think of it if they had not actually seen the movie. You'd have absolutely no idea what was going on.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like Pixar didn't even send the storyboards over to the developer of the game. So they were given like a paragraph of what the movie is about, and then told to write their own story. It's ridiculous. It's not like an alternate take. It doesn't take place after the events of the movie. It's a sad, pitiful attempt to retell the movie, except they screwed up everything. It's just awful.
The DS version, after you like, it's all mission based. Like it'll be like a little really simple platforming level, like collect 10 mushrooms or make it to the end of the sewers. And the game itself is pretty easy, but after each level, like, you're interspliced with, like, scenes from the movie. They're not, they're just text-based with, pictures next to them, but it seems to follow the story of the movie pretty well. It doesn't seem like they made anything up like you're talking about in the Wii version, Johnny.
Mm.
All right, well, in the movie how the rat goes and lives with a human?
Right.
Okay, that doesn't happen in the game. The Wii game. The rat lives with his family in the sewer for the entire movie.
Wow.
And he meets up after he's separated from his family. He's almost immediately reunited with them, whereas in the movie this happens quite late.
Yeah.
And there's a period where he's kind of on his own. It's like a growing up story. It's like leaving the nest, making your mark on the world. None of that's in the game. He gets separated, and 30 minutes later, they're back together, and they're living in the colony in the sewer, and everything's hunky-dory. And the only time he goes to the kitchen of the restaurant, where most of the movie takes place, is when he's going in there to help his fellow rats steal food.
Yeah.
Which is actually, like, there's a very huge, obvious subtext, like, don't steal, running through the whole movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there you go.
The entire game is about stealing food from humans.
That's so terrible.
It's incredible.
Wow.
It's like, I wonder if they either didn't see the movie or didn't see any portion of the movie leading up to the game's development, or if they saw it and they just didn't understand what the hell it was about.
No, there's no way. That movie, it's obviously, the story is told in such a way that anyone, a 7-year-old, can understand what's going on in Ratatouille.
You would think.
They must have not seen it. I mean, which is their fault, and also sort of
maybe
Pixar's
the game
fault.
Was developed by 6-year-olds.
Oh.
Maybe they were just on the cusp.
That's a low blow. That's a low blow, Johnny.
Yeah, well, this game is a low blow.
Ouch.
This game is punching me in the crotch.
Well, okay. With that in mind, let's move on to community. And, well, Johnny, maybe now you'll cheer up because we have a question about Metroid Prime 3. So, Snoogans asks, basically...
Snoogans.
Yeah, he wants to know, you know, we've seen a lot of footage now of Metroid Prime 3, and I'm just paraphrasing here. But, you know, it seems a lot more like a shooter than an adventure game. We've talked about this multiple times on the show. But he basically wants to know, is this going to be like Metroid Prime Hunters or Metroid Prime 1 and 2? So, what do you guys think?
Well, having played the game, I've played about 35, 40 minutes of the game in the hour I got to sit down with it at E3.
Mm-hmm.
The opening sequence is really action-y. I think it's the most action you're ever going to see ever in an opening of a Metroid game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all still tutorial-based. It's like, you know, shoot these switches, but like after you shoot the switches, you got to take down two or three enemies. And then, you know, you get the grappling beam, so you got to clear away the debris, and here come those little drone things you got to shoot out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
So the beginning of the game is very, very in your face. The comparisons to Metroid Prime Hunters also kind of might have arise from the fact that there are other bounty hunters in the game, too.
Mm-hmm.
Based off of the first hour, I definitely will say that it's probably not going to be a Metroid Prime Hunters game. I mean, it's Metroid Prime 3. There's going to be the full story. There's going to be... you know, all like the puzzle solving and the you know, the morph ball puzzle stuff, and there's going to be a higher emphasis on combat just because the Wii remote allows you to shoot stuff a lot more easily than you could with the you know, the analog stick and the lock on the GameCube games. You can still lock on the Wii version, but you can still shoot anywhere you want while you're locked on, which is a great feature.
Right.
But just the fact that the game will be more actiony probably won't change the fact that it's still going to be a Metroid Prime game, I think. We'll have to, you know, play the full version to know that for sure, but I don't see why they would go down the Metroid Prime Hunters path. I'm sure they were inspired a little bit by Hunters,
mm-hmm.
but it's probably more because that's the nature of the Wii remote and how you play the game on the Wii more than it's, you know, just in a like Quake-style deathmatch kind of a game. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. It'll be a Metroid game.
Well, sure. I mean,
let me give a simpler version of that answer. Metroid Prime Hunters was a multiplayer game, and Prime 3 doesn't have multiplayer.
Well, there you go.
So, well,
you
know, yeah.
The single player part of Metroid Prime Hunters is just levels from the multiplayer strung together with tunnels, and the bounty hunters, in other words, the playable characters from the multiplayer, shoved in there as bosses. It's a complete joke. Okay, there's absolutely no... I mean, in other words, what you're asking us to believe is that Retro Studios has spent 3 years making a Wii version of the single-player game from Metroid Prime Hunters. That is not possible in this universe.
Yeah, guys, this is the same Retro. They know what they're doing. It's going to be a good game.
Though they obviously will be putting more of an emphasis on shooting because Nintendo sort of wants to use this game to prove to people that a first-person shooter can be done on the system well.
Yeah, and but they did.
The wow, fact that the game may have more shooting than before is not going to make it less of a Metroid game. Go back and play the original Metroid for NES. It has a lot of shooting in it. That's not the problem. Metroid is not defined by what you add to it. What happens when you take a game like Metroid Prime Hunters that tries to be a Metroid game and fails... It fails because of things that it does not have, not what it added to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have the spirit of exploration. It doesn't have the upgrading system and the whole game design, the way it flows. It doesn't have that sense of isolation. So that's the stuff that it doesn't have good platforming. It has bad platforming. So all that stuff is why it's not a good Metroid game. Metroid Prime Hunters, if it had the kind of level design, the kind of game design that the Prime games have, I wouldn't care that it has a lot more shooting and it feels more like a first-person shooter. That doesn't bother me at all. And I think that's what Prime 3 is going to be like. It's going to have more shooting elements. It's going to have more natural shooting. But the actual game design and the level design and all that makes the Prime games what we love about Metroid, that's not going to go anywhere.
The only thing I'm really worried about is, Johnny, you mentioned the sense of isolation, and that's definitely a huge component of Metroid. And I think that is something that might be fading a little in Metroid Prime 3, specifically because there's all these other bounty hunters, and in addition to that, there's also voice acting. And if they're putting voice acting in the game, that makes me think there's going to be a decent amount of voice acting in the game, which means there's going to be a decent amount of people talking in the game, which means you're not going to be alone.
I do worry about that. Yes.
Yeah, I worry about it for a different reason, and the fact that this was kind of there in Metroid Prime 2, and it's always been, I guess, just starting to come up in the Mario games, but one-way conversations, I don't really like those at all. People are talking to people are talking to Samus, but she's not talking back.
She's nodding her head.
I mean, you're getting all this information, but you go, and I guess the idea is, well, yeah, everybody understands what's going on, but unless your character is talking back, it's you're only really getting half of the story. I feel like in games with like serious voice acting, like Metal Gear Solid, you know, Snake has a voice. Of course, he has a voice. Can you imagine if you went through the entirety of Metal Gear Solid?
Yeah, but they can't
give, ever speaking.
There's literally no way they can give Samus a voice because at least 90% of the people will call blasphemy regardless of how good she sounds.
Exactly. So what's the point of even putting voice acting in the game in the first place?
And they can't do something.
But here's how it works.
Like
Snake
Paper
has
Mario.
A voice, Samus has gameplay.
Oh.
You know, they can't
low blows from Johnny.
They can't do something
it's one or the other.
They can't do something zany like with Samus, like, you know, in Mario in the RPGs, he sort of just pantomimes everything and that works brilliantly, but obviously Samus can't do that.
Right.
Although I would love to see a Paper Metroid.
Paper Metroid. That'd be kinda cool actually, like the old 2D Metroid, old Paper Mario but with Samus.
Sure. Yes. Well, we've gone a little bit off track, and it's actually time for us to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about the news, so stay tuned. All right, and we're back from that break, and first up, we've got Virtual Console Mondays. Today, Paper Mario, Balloon Fight, and Silent Debugger have been released.
For the N64, Nintendo Entertainment System, and TurboGrafx-16, respectively.
Thank you, Mike. And obviously the big game this week is Paper Mario. Now, woohoo! I myself hate Paper Mario in all shapes and forms, but I'll let you guys discuss it.
Well, Carl obviously has no soul, clearly.
Yeah. Hey, Carl.
Yes.
You're fired.
I'm fired.
Take over hosting. I'm not laughing.
For what it's worth, I think the original Paper Mario is better than Thousand Year Door. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think it's better than Super Paper Mario 2.
I prefer Mario RPG for its zaniness.
Different, not better.
I think it's zanier in a different way, and I love it.
I just think Paper Mario feels like my first RPG 1,000 times over. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah.
That's sort of the idea.
I agree with that.
But that doesn't appeal to me, which is why I don't like Paper Mario.
Well, there aren't many RPGs on Virtual Console, so if you really want one, this is certainly a good choice. It's a good choice anyway.
Yeah,
but,
it's definitely worth it. It's definitely one of the better games on Virtual Console overall.
If you're a baby...
Apparently we are all babies.
Carl, why are you still talking? I thought I fired you.
Well, whatever.
Balloon Fight also, not, you know, I mean, for an arcade-style game, it's pretty fun. I'm not sure it's $5 fun, but Balloon Fight inside Animal Crossing was, you know, fun for a couple minutes at least.
Yeah, and it's got that cool music.
Yes.
Do-do-do-do. Do 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 do
do.
That's fascinating.
And last up, Silent Debugger. All I need to say about Silent Debugger is that it's a first-person shooter on TurboGrafx-16. End of story. Don't buy it.
Yeah.
Watch, it's probably apparently fantastic.
What is a Silent Debugger?
I don't know.
It's a dude who sits in a room and just, you know, fixes code while drinking Mountain Dew and eating Doritos.
Excitedly.
Oh, okay.
Hey,
but
you know, there are some good 16-bit first-person games.
Baseball.
What?
Baseball.
I mean, baseball joke.
Baseball. Oh, no. There's even a better one. There's one called, there's a series of two RPGs, adventure games, rather, on Super Nintendo. The first one's called Draken, which is quite good.
Oh, yeah.
And the sequel was a little different. It was less RPG-ish and more like a Zelda game, and it's called Dragon View, and it is awesome. So maybe one day we'll see those on Virtual Console.
Perhaps. Well, as far as new game announcements go, we've got many, 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 and a lot of them were overshadowed by E3, so we're just going to go through those kind of quickly here. First up, a new Trauma Center for Wii. Woo!
What was the subtitle for this? Does it have a subtitle yet?
It's
New Blood.
It's called New Blood.
New Blood. Yes. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, when I went by the Atlas booth at E3, I was like, you know, I heard about this game earlier in the week. It's like, ooh, man, maybe they'll have a playable. And they just had a video. So I was like, oh, man. Yeah, that's but right. They had some really cool swag. It's a pen, but it looks like a needle. And there's like red liquid inside of it. So it looks like you're injecting somebody if you're writing it.
Wow, I think I had one of those in third grade. And it wasn't cool then either.
Yeah, so like we're probably going to give it away for the Hot Topic this week, so I don't want to go through security with it.
Awesome prize.
Yes. Along with various random E3 swag.
But Johnny, didn't you play the Trauma Center on Wii at launch?
Hell yeah.
And it was good, wasn't it?
Hell yeah.
So this will be good too, right?
Hell yeah.
Alrighty.
I like Johnny's new way of talking. It speeds things up.
Yeah.
Well, Second Opinion was basically the DS game. They just, you know, weeded up and added a couple of missions. So this will be interesting to see an entirely new game.
Well, you know, this one's gonna have voice acting, which is pretty cool.
Oh.
There's a lot of dialogue in the Trauma Center games, and it's very well written. Actually, they tell quite interesting stories. So I'm looking forward to the voice acting.
Can it be well acted?
No.
We shall see.
We shall.
I'm worried for that.
Well, we've also got a new Mario Party here, and it's on DS, so, you know, touchscreen functionality.
Does it play on Nintendo Wi-Fi connection? Does anyone know that?
I am not sure.
That has not been announced. I doubt it. But it does have local 4-player wireless off one game card.
That's pretty good. Mario Party, I mean, I'm still shocked that Mario Party 8 wasn't on Nintendo Wi-Fi connection. It just seems like the first game you would want to put on Wi-Fi connection.
Oh, well.
I know, but the problem is Mario Party 8 was developed by a team of 3 people.
Well, there you go. And, you know,
they just didn't have the resources, you know. Yeah. At this point, they just feed them into a machine.
That's right.
And it pops out a new game.
It's not too far off from reality.
Well, I actually made a mistake while making the show notes. I thought, when I was looking at this game, that it was a new iteration of the Kuru Kuru Kururin series, but it's actually just a name called Kururin Donut.
Carl does not apparently know that Kururin means spinning in Japanese. Of course, I didn't either until I was just told 5 minutes ago. I just wanted to make him look like an idiot.
Well, yeah, so there's this new game called Kururin Donut, and you're basically a spinning donut. Go figure.
And it's a platformer, and at one point there's like a giant teddy bear, and you can climb up walls and on the ceilings. And
it looks sweet.
It looks awesome, if not like in like some complete like sort of candy LSD sort of way. It looks amazing.
Maybe this is the return of the Captain Insano mascot platformers.
Perhaps. But yes, look for some preview coverage on that soon. And another new DS game is Orcs and Elves, which you may or may not know. It's actually a mobile game that was developed by John Carmack of Doom and Quake fame.
Why he's working on mobile games is beyond me.
He's into the mobile thing now. Like, he made Doom RPG, he made Orcs and Elves, and now it's being ported over to DS, so...
He also designed spacecraft.
Yeah.
They don't work very well, though.
Well, yeah, so... I know, it was very positively received on mobile platforms, so it could be gone on DS.
Yeah, but positive received on mobile platforms means, like, 6 people bought it.
That's true. I played Doom RPG. I played Doom RPG after it got, like, a lot of good praise, and it sucked.
See?
It was horrible. I hated it.
Mobile games,
but it's great compared to most mobile games.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, what does it really have to live up to? So yeah. There you go.
Well, the problem with mobile games is the same problem with PC games, is that there's no way to optimize it for one configuration because everyone's cell phone is different and it needs to run on all of them, and they all have different specs and different components and different size screens and everything.
Exactly.
Well, at least until everybody gets an iPhone.
Yes.
And then they will.
So
be
you
awesome.
All become as cool as me.
Perhaps
so Orcs and Elves will be optimized for DS the same way that Doom was optimized for Super Nintendo.
We'll see. Next up, Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi 3 is going to be online on the Wii only. The PS2 is getting some other content, but for the most part, who cares?
Yeah, the PS2 ain't getting the motion controls.
That's true.
Yet, which they're actually much improved over this over number 2.
Are they really? Because I remember I played the second one, and it actually was a lot of fun. If they can fix the frame rate issues in the multiplayer, it'll be really great.
Yeah, I played it. I played it over at Atari's booth, and it looked really good. I didn't play that much of the second one, but it looked a lot faster. The the scope of the arenas are pretty big, mm-hmm. although there won't be that many arenas to fight in. I think there were only like six or eight that they said they were going to confirm.
Yeah, there weren't that many in two.
Yeah, they said there's going to be like 150 characters.
Sounds about right. Well, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. No, I mean, the second one had every single Dragon Ball Z character ever. Ever.
Well, yeah. Where can you go from there?
Well, apparently down.
Palette swaps.
You're going to have to create new ones. That's what they're going to have to do for Mortal Kombat.
Mike, it was palette swaps already. It was palette swaps. Like, yeah. when you have like 300 characters, honestly, like, it's there are basically 10 types, and there are 30, like, times it by 30, and that's a palette swap.
So it's like the enemies in Dragon Quest.
Basically.
Yeah. But the motion controls in DBZ3, you use the nunchuck and the remote, mm-hmm. and you charge up your key meter, you know, like the power up thing that takes like 60 episodes to do in the TV show.
How long does it take in the Wii version? Do you have to play like once a week for 30 minutes or something?
No, like to completely fill it up, it takes about 40 seconds, which is kind of by design, actually.
Yeah.
And like you hold the direction of the D-pad button, and a little prompt will pop up in the bottom of the screen. Mm-hmm. To the how you should, you know, move the controllers to do the special move.
Right.
So it's pretty simple to do. Like I was doing the Kamehamehas and the Spirit Bombs and the and whatever else they do.
Well, that's fun.
You know, Kamehameha is named after the first king of Hawaii.
Yeah, I did know that actually.
Yeah, actually.
That's actually common knowledge.
Okay, well, never mind.
Well, here's something you might be interested in. It's PQRS, which is the game by Steven Spielberg on the Nintendo Wii. And
I pronounce it Porkers.
Porkers, excellent.
Sounds good. Well, Wendy, you played it, didn't you?
No, I didn't play it. EA only showed it off as a demo at their press conference.
Okay.
Which is why we only did a preview, not impression. But I am really, really excited about this game. When they showed it off, it was really, really early. Yeah. But it looks really freaking cool.
I don't know.
It's like a...
I'm a little upset that all the weight and the storytelling prowess of Steven Spielberg is being put into a puzzle game.
Well,
I'm sure
yes
it'll be
and no.
excellent, but I was really hoping for like a huge epic story based.
Well, that's
game.
The next gen game that he's making.
I know.
Yeah, that's LMNO.
I was hoping both of his games.
That
would
all
be
that stuff's going to be an LMNO.
Yeah.
For the 360 and PS3. Like for that game, EA, like at the press conference, EA said that they're going back to the original, you know, phrase that their company was founded on: "Can a game make you cry?"
Right.
And they're going to try to do that with the other game. But anyways, back to Porkers. You could basically, it's like Jenga. You have pieces of blocks and you have different size blocks that you can build basically any structure you want. You can build a tower, you can build like five little small clumps of blocks on the ground, and you can also put in special blocks, like there are like bombs and there are special chemical blocks to when two of them contact each other, they make a really big explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is, or at least one of the ideas of the game, is to, you can either yank a block out by any way you want and gravity will take over,
right.
Or you can throw a ball at one of the blocks anywhere you want and the blocks will, you know, shift, and if you hit it hard enough one will just pop out and then all the blocks will fall by gravity. And they were flipping through levels that they were making with like the custom level editor that will be a really important part of the game, and there are like, they're just guys flipping through really quick, and there were about 22 dozen different levels that were completely different wild creations. It was nuts. And they finished a demonstration with kind of a Rube Goldberg kind of machine where they threw a ball, block kind of dominoed down to another block, which dominoed down to another block, which caused blocks to spring out all over the place, which caused a chemical block to hit another chemical block, which caused an explosion, which caused a chain reaction of explosions like around sliding blocks around the ground, which caused another chain reaction as blocks sent over the air. And when they landed, this giant block kind of came down and squished about a dozen cows, and that was the end of it.
That sounds like something they set up for the press that you'll never see in the game.
Well,
no. That's exactly the point. Every single level made in that demo, you can make in the level editor.
You can. All right, well, I don't want to sound like a hater here, because this sounds like a cool puzzle game, but what the hell does it have to do with Steven Spielberg?
That's what I'm saying. Like, anyone could have made this game.
No. Yeah. Spielberg got the idea. when playing Wii Sports with Miyamoto at last year's E3.
Really?
Yeah. I bet someone at EA got the idea, and they showed it to Steven Spielberg, and he's like, oh, this is cool. I'll take credit for it. You'll pay me. Because this just doesn't sound like... I mean, what in Steven Spielberg's history of work has anything to do with this? Like, what could give you even the idea that... I mean, he's not a game designer. Nobody expected him to pull out a game like this when this EA deal was announced. You expect him to come up with an interesting story or some kind of game that does something cinematically that we've never seen before, or to make a game that supposedly makes you want to cry.
Creativity
doesn't have to be limited to film. But what makes Steven Spielberg think he can jump in and just create some kind of random-ass puzzle game, I just don't buy it. I just really highly doubt this concept came from his mind.
Well, we don't really know that since this is only the second game he has ever made in his life.
Yeah.
So you can't compare it to other games he has done because he has never
made other games. No, but we can compare it to his basis in film and, you know, he's never done anything like this in film. Like, why would Steven Spielberg come up with this idea? It seems completely unlike him, is what Johnny's trying to say.
Well, it does, but maybe that's why he made the game. It just,
I mean,
he's
a versatile guy. I've seen a lot of his movies, and he can do a lot of stuff. But, you know, I just have never thought of him as being this abstract. And I kind of doubt he is, because the kind of movies that he makes are not at all abstract. You know,
well, I doubt Spielberg would endorse a game that he really wasn't involved with.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
Yeah, I think he's about as involved with this game as the football players on the cover of Madden
Ouch.
Are involved with Madden every
he's
year.
Like a, he's producer level, you know, like he can produce a film, but that all that really means is that he fronted the money for it and he's maybe, you know, made some connections, but his artistic vision doesn't go into a film he produces. His artistic vision goes into a game or a film he directs.
I think he plays it every month and says, "Oh, this is looking good."
Yeah,
keep it
like
up.
Like a producer would do.
Well, he probably
anyway,
does that
sorry,
with his other,
just,
with the other
I'm
game
just
too.
Ranting
so.
Here. It's not that relevant. Sorry.
Well, yeah.
So we'll see.
Speaking of irrelevance, NASCAR is going to have a Wii car.
Woo! Nintendo is obviously spending a ton of money to really reach the casual market because I'm pretty sure NASCAR sponsorship, especially when you paint the entire car and not just put a sticker on it, I'm pretty sure that costs a lot of money.
Yeah, I think a full year NASCAR sponsorship goes about $15 million.
Wow. Well, this is like a 5-race sponsorship, but still.
Yeah, this is only a two race deal, probably 800,000-900,000, maybe $1 million, which actually is a lot, is pretty good money, or pretty good value still.
Yeah, a lot
it's
of people are
cheap,
gonna see that car, so.
Yeah, which is the point. I mean, millions of people watch NASCAR. I don't know why, but they do.
They're doing it,
and you know.
Maybe this means Nintendo's making a NASCAR game.
Yeah, right. Maybe not.
Because you know, there's not really one on Wii right now.
I've been commenting this in the mailbag a lot, but I'm very, very, very surprised that EA hasn't ported over a NASCAR game yet, because there's really no other racing sim game out yet. And there are a lot of, you know, NASCAR is a casual sport, you could say, now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the audiences match up, but...
Well...
You know, Wii remote controls, steering wheel, come on.
Well, speaking of wasting money, here's our last story of the day. And it's basically now when you win a season in Madden, you can actually order a Super Bowl ring with like the team's logo on it and everything.
And these will cost like somewhere between $150 and $500. And they come from the same company that makes the Super Bowl ring. They're obviously not, you know, anywhere near the quality, and you probably look like an idiot wearing one, but you can have it if you are
that
diehard.
You can hold
hard.
It up in the air and say, "I'm going to Disneyland."
That's right.
And then you can sit back down on your couch.
You know, actually, I don't think it's from the same company that makes the Super Bowl rings. I think that they are the same company that makes like class.
No,
rings
they do make class rings, but they've also made 27 of the 41 Super Bowl championship rings.
Oh, they have. Yeah. Okay, so I guess they're like any other jewelry company.
Yeah,
they're like a ring conglomerate.
Yeah, basically,
they make all rings. They made the one ring.
To rule them all?
Wow.
Sure.
Forged in fire.
But according to this press release, each ring incorporates simulated stones chosen by the gamer as well as cubic zirconium stones in the design, and gamers will also be able to add genuine diamonds if they prefer the ultimate ring of a champion.
I love that it says simulated stones. That's the most awesome way to say fake ever.
They're simulated.
So it's colored glass.
Hey, you guys know what the best part is?
Yeah.
When people buy Madden 2009... they're going to have to buy another ring.
Yeah, that's at least $150
because
per year.
Owning a 2008 ring is so
we call
last
that,
year.
We call those macro transactions, kids.
Oh!
It's macro transactions.
Instead of roster updates, you'll get a ring update.
Well, you know, at least maybe you'll be able to send your old ring in and get a discount, because I know they do that on, like these ring companies do that kind of stuff. If you want to upgrade your high school class ring to a college class ring, they'll, like, take your ring and give you like $50 for it and melt it down into scrap and then give you a discount off your college ring.
Well, that's good.
Perhaps.
So basically they're a pawn shop.
Essentially. I mean,
that's awesome.
Well, the video game industry is no stranger to pawn shops, so.
That's true.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about E3 postmortem, so stay tuned. All right, and we're back for our feature topic, E3 postmortem. I figure we can start off pretty simple with our favorite and least favorite moments. Johnny, I'm going to go ahead and start with you.
Oh, thanks.
I'll start because I have some.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike,
my favorite moment has to be Peter Moore coining the phrase "pulling a Moore" while playing Guitar Hero, which is where you hold the guitar like an idiot so your palm covers the start button while you strum, and you accidentally pause the game like every 4 seconds. While you are premiering the game live at your press conference, which took place at a high school in Santa Monica.
Wasn't he playing Rock Band?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, did I say Guitar Hero? I meant Rock Band, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was playing Rock Band at the time, world premiering it, and definitely screwed it up twice in like a minute's time.
Especially like when he was going down to the finish, like pause.
Yeah.
Speaking of
ruined a perfectly good song by the Hives.
Speaking of a cringeworthy executive, how about Jack Tretton, huh? I mean, really. What an asshat.
That's a little harsh.
No, he did this whole presentation through home, and like, okay, he there's a part in the press conference where he hugs a Wookiee in celebration of the new edition of the PSP. I mean,
Well, we want to talk about things that are scary. Was I cannot remember his name, but Microsoft had this one guy at their press conference.
Oh, yeah, the guy who just talked perfectly.
It wasn't that he was monotonous. It was that his voice was so amazingly immaculate in its PR, like, octave or whatever. Everything came out at the perfect volume, at the perfect meter. It was like listening to a robot.
He is a robot.
But I also got to mention another ace moment from Microsoft's press conference is when the same guy is playing Madden against Reggie Bush, and Reggie Bush is just wiping the floor with this guy, and at one point Reggie Bush turns away and he's just holding the controller and holding the joystick forward running for the end zone, and he starts going, I'm not even looking.
He's a producer on that game.
Alright, well, Mike, what was your least favorite moment?
I don't even know if I have a least favorite moment. I guess because there was nothing that was like completely terrible, but there was a whole lot of mediocre, and I guess that's going to be my least favorite moment of the show.
There was a lot of mediocre.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Wendy, as someone who was actually there, what are your moments?
Oh man, let's see. There's not really any one moment that really stuck out for me. You know, the Nintendo press conference was kind of meh, and then. If there was one moment, I was definitely playing Metroid for an hour, because not that many people got to do that, actually.
Yeah.
So I was really happy about that. But I just have to say, overall, just the quality of the Wii games from everybody is definitely a lot higher than it was at launch. There's a definite step up in both like the Wii versions of multi-platform games, not really ports anymore, they are really Wii versions of multi-platform games, and also the original games, stuff like DeBlob from THQ. It looks shallow, but it looked also really interesting.
So you're saying basically that like the Wii is getting to that point in its life cycle where like in the same spot in the DS, like a year after the DS came out, there were a whole bunch of amazing DS games on display at E3.
Yeah, and I think the Wii were getting it. Yeah, the Wii is getting to where the DS is currently faster, because people have already saw what the DS went through. And they're just totally skipping over that first, you know, year of crap. They're just getting it out. They're getting it out. Well, I guess the Wii had a first year of crap, too, but they kind of...
Yes, it has.
First 6 months of crap.
Yeah, it's just 6 months of crap. But I did not play a single bad game at E3 on the Wii. I did play one or two that were very rough and early, but they weren't bad. They just, you know, weren't very smooth. Yeah, they're not bad yet. I'll say that. So I was very pleasantly surprised. Not only the Wii, but some of the stuff I saw on the PS3 and the 360 were amazing. Mm-hmm. Like Call of Duty 4.
Yeah.
Wow. I was stunned at that game. I was literally floored. I'm not the type to be floored by a game. I was like,
can I take a moment to bitch about Call of Duty 4?
No.
This is a very brief moment.
I know what he's going
to
say.
Carl, yeah, because I think I'm pretty sure I've talked to Carl about this. I take offense to them calling it modern combat when it very clearly takes place like 15 years in the near future, Tom Clancy style, versus the Russians, who aren't even really our enemies right now, or probably won't be in 15 years. If they're going to call it modern combat, they should have the balls to put you in Iraq.
Yeah, but you know,
it's
no,
such a hot button issue
that.
It's such a hot button issue that nobody will do it. But then they should call it Call of Duty Future Combat, or what they should really call it is Tom Clancy Future Combat, because it looks a lot like a Tom Clancy game to me. Even though I'm not saying it looks bad, it looks freaking incredible, but it looks like a Tom Clancy game the way it's set in
okay,
like the near future.
Your moment of brevity is over.
All right. Well, speaking of other consoles' trailers, Resident Evil 5 looked awesome.
Yeah, and that was only a partial trailer, too.
Oh, dude, I can't wait to see the full thing. Yeah. It looks so great.
Middle Gear
there
Solid
wasn't any gameplay
ridiculous.
In it at all.
Yeah, I know, but like it just looked really like you're in Africa or, you know, some African country, I assume. And like
could
it
be
just
South America.
How I don't do think
know?
So.
Did you see lions and tigers and bears? Oh my!
Well, that's not all of Africa, Johnny. I mean, it's not all Africa. You know, lions and tigers and bears. Oh my!
It looked like a South African market to me.
It did
like something. If you've seen The Constant Gardener, it reminded me a lot of that.
Sure. So you know, it looked really cool and it looked really like intense with the guy. He's like his eyes are bleeding and stuff. It looked crazy. And then on top of that, Metal Gear Solid 4, that trailer with Raiden. Holy crap!
Yeah, I was there for that. That was interesting.
Interesting.
You know, once again, they told you nothing about the game.
Well,
but
yeah. I mean,
actually, let me put a plug in for a friend. My good friend Dan Dormer, who does Player One podcast on YouTube today, put up like this amazingly in-depth analysis of the Metal Gear Solid 4 trailer, where he's taking like freeze frame stills of it and analyzing like little things about it. Like, oh, we can clearly see that this person is going to be an important player, and there's all sorts of these little plot elements that Kojima's hidden in the trailer that if you weren't like a ridiculous Metal Gear Solid fan like he is, that you probably wouldn't even catch.
Yeah, I saw it. It's actually pretty good, so I would recommend it as well.
I'm ready for my pros and cons.
Okay, Johnny, go for it. Go.
Okay, for my pro, this might sound a little corny, but I was, and I knew it was coming, but I was really pleased with the presentation of Wii Fit. It might have gone a little too long, it might have used up a little too much of the press conference, mm-hmm. but I think Wii Fit looks really cool. I definitely want to try it out, and it was funny, that morning I watched the press conference, and then later on I went to school for a while, and Wii Fit was the one thing that I just kept thinking about over and over and over again. It's like it really just kind of implanted itself in my mind. So I'm really excited to see how that turns out.
Yeah, me too. I actually would probably buy it because I don't go to the gym because I'm a lazy dude. And I can,
yeah, I know.
I think
was actually like the kind of thing that would actually it's kind of like I used to play DDR for exercise, and
yeah.
It worked out well, but where I live now, I'm on the second floor, and when I play DDR, the people below me like smack the ceiling with a broomstick or something. They don't like it. So this will be more non-impact. The bad part was when Reggie was talking about online and he tried to like be all buff and macho. Ugh. Like, we know what we're doing with online.
You just haven't
noticed. I know what you're asking. Hey, when's Nintendo really gonna get serious online? The answer is never. Never.
Yes.
But you know, the serious Wii owners already have Pokemon Battle Revolution.
Oh, God.
And he's saying this to an audience of journalists, every single one of which in that crowd knows that that game is awful.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was the most disingenuous, awful part of that presentation. I could not believe he had the gall to talk about online in that way, to lead up like he's got some big announcement coming, and he doesn't. All he says is Mario Strikers, which I'm sure is cool, but we already knew about it. It still uses friend codes, etc., etc. Pokemon, which is terrible. Pokemon, which has better online features in the DS game than it does in the Wii game.
Mm-hmm.
And freaking Mario Kart, which is great, awesome, but again, friend codes, no voice chat. I mean, just guaranteed, it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not interested in you announcing a game which everybody knew you were going to announce and which everybody knew was going to be online in any way, which is Mario Kart. I'm interested in you telling me when the hell you're going to fix online. When are you going to do it right?
Yeah. And the answer is never.
And on top of that,
the answer is never.
And then on top of that,
pretend like you're about to announce some big thing, because he didn't. He didn't.
And on top of that, nothing on Smash Brothers. Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got like 15 seconds of video.
Ugh.
Come on, guys. It's your. Yeah. It, you know, that kind of struck me. Like, Nintendo kept saying, oh, we're still in it for the hardcore gamer. We're still in it for the hardcore gamer. And they show, you know, Mario Sunshine is the game for the hardcore gamer. No, Mario Sunshine is going to be freaking amazing, but
Galaxy,
it is not.
Galaxy, sorry.
Mario Galaxy is going to be freaking amazing, but it is not for the hardcore gamer. It is for everybody.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know what? Mario Kart, same thing. Metroid Prime, sure, that's for the hardcore gamer, but that's coming out in a week. They have no. Their biggest game, like, this is the game that proves we are in it for the hardcore gamer, is Smash Brothers, and they show 15 seconds, don't even announce a new character, absolutely nothing.
Oh,
don't say
anything
ridiculous.
About online. They did announce a character, Mike. It was Donkey Kong.
No, they announced that on the blog. They didn't announce that.
Dr. Wright! Woo!
And yeah, they didn't mention online, which just puts another nail in the coffin of Smash Brothers going online.
They did, actually, when they brought. They were talking about Brawl around the same time they were talking about online games. So
they never said Brawl was going online.
They never said, but I mean.
And they said it like 2 years ago, but I don't believe it anymore. With the way Nintendo's online system, if you can even call it an online system, the way it is now. That game is not going online. It's gonna be a buggy, laggy mess if it goes online.
Well, hey, if Virtua Fighter can do it, why not Smash Brothers? You know?
It's not gonna happen.
I'm
certain at this point that Smash Brothers will not be going online.
I'm gonna go ahead and put money on this and say that it's gonna be two players online. That's it.
I could maybe see that, but there's no way we'll be getting four players.
Oh, no. I'm with you on that one. There's
and
no way.
If they're going to have two players online, they should have said something about it at the press conference.
Yeah.
When he's trying to convince us that he's got some big announcement about online coming
right.
up.
Well, as far as my best and worst moments, definitely the worst moments is the lack of... They have games to show, they just didn't show them. Like, you could have brought out, and I know I'm going to get flack for this, but No More Heroes. You could have brought out a lot of these gamers' games that they have them, they're coming. They just didn't mention them. And for, you know, when you're trying to make a big splash at a press conference, why not show off the games that you've got?
And to sort of expand on that, you know, Nintendo seems to, like, really be a third-party darling right now because everyone's buying their system and everyone wants to make games for it. Did they show anything third-party at their press conference?
Nothing.
Well, they did ream off, the list of... Yeah. Key third-party titles.
Like,
and
they
did actually
that.
Announce
that
Call of Duty on Wii would be online 32
yeah, but they
player.
Do that. They do that every year. They, you know, trot out the names. But in other years...
In other years, they
do, like, big things, like have Namco come out and demo Pac-Man Versus, which, granted, wasn't a very huge game, but they actually brought people from Namco out to do that, you know?
I think Red Steel is a better example. But
yeah, Red Steel.
What the hell did you just say about Call of Duty?
Didn't they say that...
Yeah.
During the conference, Call of Duty would be they didn't say online, but they did say 32 player multiplayer.
Yeah,
which sort
I didn't
of
implies
hear I heard that.
I heard that too.
There.
Yeah,
it's definitely true.
Yeah, that was
there's not even a Call of Duty game announced for Wii right now.
No, you think it's Medal of Honor?
It is Medal of Honor.
Oh, Medal of Honor. Sorry, you know, they get those generic
World
War II shooters.
Medal of Honor game that you play with the zapper.
Yeah,
that doesn't seem like a good idea.
32 players online. Well,
yep.
Maybe online. One would assume that since it's 32 players, it would be online.
And hey, dedicated servers, right? Right?
No.
Out
of here.
All right. As far as my best moment, though, I have to give it to Super Mario Galaxy. I was interested in the game, and I was watching it, but I wasn't really totally, I'm completely hyped for it now. Watching those trailers, it looks amazing.
It is amazing.
I'm totally psyched to be a bumblebee. That's it. I mean, I'm psyched for it. It looks so cool.
To me, I'm not really any more psyched for it than I was last year because obviously, you know, they're introducing new things like the bumblebee and stuff, but essentially what they showed this year was very similar to what they showed last year.
It was just basically the polished product
The graphics,
is coming out in a couple of months.
The graphics are so good.
They are
leagues beyond what we've seen so far on Wii, which goes to show you that developers are being lazy.
Well, duh.
The Wii is capable of so
no,
much more.
Developers
visually.
Aren't being lazy. They just don't know how to develop in the GameCube/Wii environment because they didn't during the GameCube years.
Yeah, they didn't care back then. So
yeah, So now that that's going to be the market leader, they need to, you know, spruce up on their, you know, GameCube developing skills or Wii developing skills.
True.
In a couple of years, we're going to see some great looking games, but the reason why most Wii games that have been out have looked nothing like GameCube games is because no GameCube games look like games that GameCube was capable of.
Sure. Well, let's go ahead and move on to what we thought of this year as like a whole compared to past E3s. Now, Wendy, since you were the only one of us there,
yeah, this is also kind of like my negative bad moment about E3, but I do like kind of the new format into which it's smaller, it's more not more compact, but it's smaller, it's faster, it's kind of the get in, get out E3. And it's nice that I don't think I would have been able to get to every game if it was in the old format, just because I would have to, you know, wait 30 minutes just to try a game. In the Barker Hangar, it was just like, you know, wait one or two people at most to get hands-on with a game, which was great.
Right.
That was really nice. But honestly, they could have done this in the convention center. They just needed to crack down on, you know, registration. If they were as anal about letting people register for the convention center as they were for, like, you know, this new Santa Monica show, they really didn't have to move it to Santa Monica.
Yeah, there was no reason to set this up in like a series of hotels.
Using
those small booths especially, there is, you know, there's no reason not to have a million meetings inside all those different meeting rooms inside the Los Angeles Convention Center.
Exactly.
Which would have made things even easier.
And what sucked about it was that I literally a couple of times had to run up and down, like, you know, the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica to get my butt to a scheduled meeting. And there were one or two meetings. Most of Sega's hotel meeting was kind of a waste, because after we saw the Nintendo games, we're like, okay, I've seen all the Nintendo games. Oh, no, you have to show this. Like, no, I'm done. Well, we can't let you out. I'm like, what? So we were basically locked into this schedule. And whether or not it was that schedule was worth it, you had to be there. Like, most of the press conferences, yeah, we got good information from them, but really, we should have been playing the games.
Well, that's what Sony did at their press conference. As soon as it was over, people could go play the games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They had, like, a whole room set up for it. And obviously, Nintendo couldn't do that because Sony's conference was right after them.
Sure.
Like, yeah. They could have.
So I think the combination of it being completely spread out and the combination of us having to pre-schedule everything really made it a total disaster. Mm-hmm. And especially, I'm very, very, very angry at the ESA that a site of our size and our readership only got one invite to the show. That is completely unacceptable. And if there is even an E3 next year, mm-hmm. that better change.
Well, I think this is that this was such a huge change from last year that for the most part, they were unprepared.
Yeah, everybody's.
And so if your name isn't 1UP or IGN or GameStop or GameSpot, you know, you weren't given as much attention.
Pretty much.
So, yeah. There you go. All right, so before we go, guys, what's the outlook on next year's E3, if there's going to be one?
Oh, I think it'll keep happening, just for the sense that it just makes sense from an economic standpoint for all of these companies to do all their gamers' days at the same time, as opposed to paying to fly journalists out to their sites. Mm. They can just go to where the journalists already are and set up a booth. That's definitely the reason E3 exists now, and it just makes sense, and they'll keep doing it that way. Now, I would really hope to see, like I said earlier, for them to move it to one giant location, so people won't have to be running around Santa Monica. Instead, they can just run around the Los Angeles Convention Center like they're used to.
Right. Okay, then. Any other thoughts before we go?
Yeah, E3 is always going to be an important event for the industry, because it's that one event to where the mainstream media can look to for big news.
Right.
I mean, when I was driving around, you know, through a farmer's market that the ESA kindly forgot to mention to us, as I was trying to find parking for a hotel meeting, I heard on the radio, you know, they were reporting on the local news, and later in the local newspapers that, you know, E3, all big game companies are showing off their new products down in Santa Monica. So even though the show got downscaled massively, the mainstream media was still reporting on it like it was last year's show. So you can't underestimate the importance of a centralized event for the industry.
Sure.
Even if it's downsized, there's still got to be that one thing people can, like, because, you know, you got Consumer Electronics Show for electronics and, you know, Macworld, like, I guess it's kind of the same thing, but you kind of see what I'm getting at, that the industry needs that one centralized event.
That big spectacle. Itself.
Yeah.
All right. Remember, folks, if you want to send us emails, that's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Please go to the iTunes Music Store, review us, subscribe, enjoy. If you'd like to dig the podcast, you can find a link at the news story, and I believe that wraps it up. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Steven. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
And see all you guys next week.
Wendy, please back up off the microphone. Oh my god.
Back up off the mic.
Dude.
No, I was just like standing up and being more boisterous.
You sound like you have emphysema and you're carrying around a tank.
Okay.
Man, I'm sour today. I'm not even in a bad mood. I'm just on a roll.